DW Spectrum with Connor Dillon.
Hello and welcome to Spectrum. My name is Connor Dillon and this is our December special. In this episode, you are going to hear how to not get tricked when you're out there with the masses buying gifts this Christmas season. You're going to find out how to get rid of all that holiday stress. And we're also going to talk about a new study that really could keep your family members safer from a house fire. But first, okay, so that music you are hearing there is from the latest music video, or the latest video posted to the YouTube account of a Japanese pop star known as Hatsune Miku. And what it shows in that video is Hatsune Miku on her latest tour, and you can see thousands of fans holding up these kind of green flashlights, and they are collectively losing their minds. And in December, Hatsune Miku is coming to Germany. She has a tour that takes her through Europe. She has ankle-length turquoise pigtails. She's a very identifiable figure. But here's the thing. Hatsune Miku isn't a real person. She's the product of a vocal synthesizer program. And if that seems really weird to you, really confusing, don't worry, because it confuses the heck out of me too. But it's worth paying attention to because this may just be the future of music. From Osaka, Japan, DW's Kai Dambach has more.
In Osaka, Japan, thousands of people are lining up way too early for a Saturday morning. Shouldn't they be taking it easy on a day like this? Well, not when their favorite pop idol is scheduled to make an appearance. Then there's no such thing as too early. Finally, a figure emerges. A giant plush version of who they're here to see comes out to greet them. They'll see the real thing soon enough. Wait, should I say the real thing? Maybe I shouldn't. Let me explain. The thousands of people waiting have come here for a concert. A Vocaloid concert. The singers are not real. They're digital. Vocaloids are voice synthesizing programs that can be used to make all kinds of music. There are several different Vocaloids, but the most popular one by far is Hatsune Miku. She has turquoise pigtails that go all the way down to her ankles and wears an outfit that makes her look like a futuristic space captain. She has controls and buttons all over her sleeves, a necktie to match her turquoise hair, a black miniskirt edged with turquoise, and black thigh-high boots with, yes, turquoise accents. She's pretty much an anime character you can control. The Vocaloid software allows users to splice and process vocal fragments from human singing voices in order to make songs. It was initially released as a fairly simple program in 2004, but its big breakthrough in Japan came a few years later when Hatsune Miku appeared on the box of a Vocaloid software in 2007. Her voice and image soon became the biggest thing in Japan after a video of her singing a folk song from Finland went viral, complete with a spinning leak. Now, there is no escaping Hatsune Miku and the Vocaloids in Japan. If Hatsune Miku were a real person, she would have been working pretty much non-stop since then. More than 100,000 songs have been created with the character. Some are just regular pop tracks, others shed a light on problems unique to Vocaloid singers, such as this one where Hatsune Miku becomes self-aware and realizes she's about to be deleted. But humans are sure to identify with many of her songs, too.
And one, two, three, f*** person, f*** burden, f*** you think I wanna take a nap. Be me an abomination before our Lord and Savior!
For the Japanese musician known as Kikuo, Vocaloid music has been key to his success. Like most other Vocaloid artists, Kikuo also loves Hatsune Miku. He's shaken up her usual cheery, carefree style and given her some dark lyrics to sing. This song is called You're a Useless Child. Nico's music gets hundreds of thousands of listens around the world and is even heard in public.
Sometimes my tunes are played on the radio and in restaurants, and then everyone realizes that they're my songs and contacts me. It's a really positive experience for me because I always wanted to create a sound of my own. I think I've been strongly influenced by video game music, especially the mentality of creating original and attractive songs.
He's even worked on a collaboration with Kizuna Ai, a virtual YouTuber. Yes, a virtual YouTuber. Japan is ahead of every technological curve you haven't even thought of. At the concert, the Vocaloids run around the stage while a live band plays around them. Obviously, the Vocaloids hit all the right notes and moves as they are projected onto a huge screen on the stage. They almost look human, but there's something too perfect about the way they move. And every so often, there are moments that snap you back to reality, reminding you they can't be real. Be it a split-second costume change mid-song, or appearing or vanishing in a beam of light. Now you're probably thinking, this is Japan being Japan and loving cutesy animated things a little too much again. But take that judgmental cap off for a moment. Hatsune Miku has found a following with some big names outside of the land of the rising sun. She opened for Lady Gaga on a tour, and other Vocaloids have appeared on a Mike Oldfield album. And animated music groups have done well outside of Japan. The Archies had a number one hit in 1969. Josie and the Pussycats and Gem and the Holograms dominated American airwaves for a time. And need I mention Gorillaz? If you really think about it, Vocaloids are perfect celebrities. They will never forget the words to their songs or their routines on stage. They will never have to cancel a performance due to any illness that can strike mere mortals. They can never really age. They can never really die. There will never be a sex scandal involving any of them or a hidden video of them destroying their careers in seconds. With everything moving towards automation, it would only make sense that celebrity and music turns that way too, right? Heck, Hatsune Miku translates to first sound of the future. Kikuo certainly thinks so.
I know many people who grew up listening to Vocaloid songs and now want to start making their own music, in the same way that we were influenced by gaming music. When I see this, I'm confident that Vocaloid music will develop further and create the future of this industry and culture.
Jason, who traveled to the Osaka concert all the way from the United States, sees it a little differently.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to replace anything, so not necessarily music of the future, but I think it'll always be something for a lot of creative people who don't necessarily have access to an excellent vocalist or something. So you can write lyrics and you can create music. Well, not only the current, the well-known Vocaloids, but the many others that spawn from its popularity can really add to your work, so I think that's going to be big.
Well, no matter what anyone says, Vocaloids look like they're going to keep growing and spread their influence further around the world. They're doing their first European tour in December, and they're heading to London, Paris, and Cologne, so get ready, bon chance, and viel Spaß. In Osaka, Japan, I'm Kai Dombach.
Well, if the future of music belongs to Vocaloids, I guess I'm still stuck in the past, at least for now. That said, I do hope that Hatsune Miku and her crew have a nice concert here in Germany.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer.
Yes, it is the most wonderful time of the year, or at least it is for the roughly 2.5 billion Christians on planet Earth who celebrate Christmas on December 25th of every year and who buy billions of gifts for each other to mark the occasion. But here is a word of warning for all of you shoppers out there. Shopping can act on your body just like a drug, and you might not have known that. And it's a very specific kind of drug. With more on this is my colleague Anne-Christine Herber, Ann-Christine, thank you for joining me today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Ann-Christine, you talked to an expert this week on the Christmas shopping drug phenomenon. Who is he? What does he do?
Well, his name is Christian Elger, and he's a German professor and a doctor for neuropsychology. And he also does research in epileptology. I mean, he's mostly focused on neuroscience, but obviously shopping has a huge effect on the brain. So, yeah.
Okay. So you had some questions for him. What was the first one?
Well, what I found most interesting is how does shopping actually affect the brain? And that's what he told me.
Every mammalian brain has a so-called reward system. If this system is activated, you have such a pleasant feeling that can't be better by anything else. So if you have this feeling, you try to get this feeling again and again. Substances like cocaine or so are using this and you feel good. And the side effect of activating the system is that your critical sense is depressed. That means the critical sense considering, do I need a thing or do I not need it? Am I able to pay this price or not? And so this combination is critical for this special discount situation.
Oof. I mean, I lose the ability to determine whether I need something or not, and I lose the ability to know whether or not I can afford it, is basically what he's saying there.
Yeah, that's true, because the brain is triggered once you go into the store, especially by these red little beautiful sale signs. When you see one of those, your brain associates it with, wow, I will get a great discount. He actually made an experiment where they had a store and they had little red signs, but the prices weren't lower than the average price. And then at the end of the day, they looked at what was sold the most, and people really bought the stuff with the red signs, even though it was a regular price.
So there's no sale, there's no discount. You just put a little red sign next to it and people are just like, wow.
Yeah, because that's what your brain associates with a red sign. It thinks, yeah, we'll get a discount on that. I will buy that.
Okay, so, well, we humans are quite stupid, unfortunately. Or let me put it this way. We are so smart that we can trick ourselves into buying things that we don't even need. We can psychologically manipulate each other. So obviously I don't want to fall victim to that trap. I don't want to have a red sign trick me into buying something I don't need. Did he have any tips on what I can do as a consumer, as a shopper, when I go out this Christmas season to not waste my money and buy stuff I don't need?
Yeah, that's also what I asked him, because obviously we all don't want to waste our money. But he actually had something interesting to say about this.
The best thing to deal with your reward system is don't take dopaminergic drugs, which is for Parkinson patients. They're in a critical situation, you have to know this. Don't take drugs like painkillers, like paracetamol, because painkillers stop the feeling of loss if you give money away for something. And that means you spend money more critically. And the second thing is to put time between your decision, especially in a discount situation. Just consider half an hour, come back in the shop and say, do I really want it after half an hour again? And you will see 50% you don't need it and you don't want it anymore.
Don't take drugs. Of all the places I expected to hear that message, not Christmas shopping, to be honest. So don't take painkillers before you go out Christmas shopping.
I know it sounds weird, but I mean, he's right. Like, it actually affects the area of the brain that usually would enable you to make a rational decision about, do I actually need this or do I not need this? And the painkiller soothes this region in the brain. And so you just get on critical and you're like, I'll just buy it. It's whatever. I'll need it.
I'm tempted here to say that message is not going to be useful for many people, because I don't take drugs before I go Christmas shopping. I don't know anyone who does. But on the other hand, I do know that a lot of the elderly have a regimen of painkillers that they take daily that have been prescribed by their doctors. So I suppose this is actually quite relevant for them. And then the other part was to take a walk, basically.
Yeah, you just go out of the store, you know, some fresh air, and you walk around the block and you're away from the item that you wanted so bad. And then you actually activate the region again in your brain that can act on it rationally, and then you start to think about it, and then you realize you didn't even want it. It probably just had a cute little red sale sign.
So we have two tips from our neuroscientist, but I think I have a third. And my third is, he's talking about spending too much, or he's saying that we have a tendency to spend, to not realize that we can't afford things. What if I load my wall it up with cash. I mean, I know this is the digital age and we should swipe our cards and use bitcoins to pay for everything. But what if I load up my, I put my budget in my wallet and then say, that's it?
I think that will actually help because he told me that nowadays, since you're able to pay everything without cash, you just swipe your credit card. You don't even realize how much money you're actually spending, you know, because you will get the bill a month later and you already forgot about it. And then you look at this stuff and you're like, wow, I actually bought that. Wow. But he said when you physically have to give the cash, then it hurts you so much more. Then you actually physically feel the loss in your tummy when you buy a coat that costs, for example, $200. And let's say you already got a $100 discount, but you will still feel the loss because you pay for it in cash.
Okay, so some tips for the holiday shoppers out there. Bring cash, as unusual as that sounds. Take a walk outside before you buy anything. And don't take drugs. In fact, never take drugs. You should never take drugs. I'm Christine Haber. Thanks for joining me in studio today.
Thanks for having me.
There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Well, we will stick with Christmas for a moment here. We were just talking about buying Christmas presents, and if your family is anything like, well, like most families out there, the whole gift buying process and the wrapping and the card writing, all of that is a bit stressful. In fact, the whole Christmas season can be kind of stressful with all the planning and the purchasing. And wouldn't it be nice if there was a proven way to reduce those Yuletide jitters, if you want to call them that, and especially if that method, that therapy, was free? Well, put your parka on if you're in the Northern Hemisphere like I am right now, because Sean Griffiths has this report from Canada on a proven stress reliever called forest therapy.
Dressed in warm, waterproof clothing and hiking boots, I've joined a group of forest bathers on the Crazy Horse Trail in woods on the outskirts of Ottawa.
And whales would have been swimming around us.
Trees of maple, oak, white pine, and birch tower above us. A light rain taps away on the leafy canopy above. We're beyond the road, beyond digital devices and iPhones, beyond to-do lists, disturbing news reports, and present-day worries. Forest therapist Andrew Prosmowski is grounding us to this place, to this moment in time, and our place in it.
No, there were the first peoples and the explorers and then us. That was a quick sprint through history. So what's our story here in this moment, on this morning, together on this land, that is part of that big story in this land?
Andrew explains why this is no ordinary hike.
In a forest therapy walk, our surroundings aren't just scenery and a landscape, a backdrop to our interaction. We're actually visiting with the forest. We're actually engaging in relationship building and noticing our connection and taking time to be present to the forest and the more than human world and the beings who are there.
To do so means tuning in to all of our senses. At Andrea's invitation, as it's known in forest therapy, we close our eyes and focus on our breathing.
Perhaps you might feel some relaxing in your muscles as your body settles down a bit more on the earth. Can you feel the air on your skin? Bringing our attention now to our sense of hearing, noticing the farthest sound.
And finally, like a big reveal, we turn to our vision sense.
When you open your eyes, perhaps you might open them like you're a newborn, discovering this gift of sight for the very first time and beholding all around you as if you're seeing it all for the first time.
Looking around, things do seem fresh, like a reboot. If this all sounds like mindfulness, a practice usually associated with yoga or meditation, that's at the heart of forest therapy. Research tells us that mindfulness, aimed at being more present and paying attention to what is around us without judgment, can be calming and work to reduce stress. Andrea invites us to venture deeper into the woods, fully engaging all of our senses. We quietly and slowly weave our way along the trail. There is little talking. Much comes into sharp focus. A small red berry on a tree, water droplets on a branch. We arrive at another clearing where we gather in small, intimate circles. We share what we have noticed in the forest.
There's so many different shades and hues and tones of green.
And the shapes of the leaves with the wind going through them, too. Some of them just, like, are shaky, and others are like a fan.
You hear the birds in stereo, you know, near and far. And I passed a tree, and I saw the tiniest bit of possibly a feather. And I would have missed that if I was just walking through a forest. It just leapt out at you, you know. Everything's heightened.
Yeah.
We're invited to find a sit spot and spend time with a forest being, to look at it, touch it, perhaps smell it. I spend time with a large, slightly battered-looking white pine, which looked like it had been through a lot. Another person sits by a pond, finding the water calming. Andrea ends our forest time with tea, fittingly made from local white pine needles.
Very nice. So delicious.
It's with the tea that we formally end the walk and start. This is our threshold to start to return to.
Oh, it's just calming. That's exactly why I came. Just. I'm going to get tearful.
It's emotional for you.
I'm fine, actually. These sort of things get to me. But no, my life is in a bit of turmoil right now, so this is just what I needed. Thank you. Sorry.
Oh. You didn't expect that?
No, not at all. Oh, sorry.
Maybe it was a release.
Maybe. Anyway, it's been wonderful.
Was there anything in this experience that stood out for you that you found really helpful?
Just the solitude time. As I said, I like being near water, so finding that little bit of a beaver pond was just what I needed, the solitude. And looking up, looking down, the smells, the decaying wood, the rain, it was just what I needed.
Maureen, a family doctor, thinks her patients could benefit from forest therapy.
Probably the number one thing that I deal with is anxiety and stress and all the ways it manifests itself. You know, people coming with chest pain, but the basis is stress. And I think an activity like this just really helps us practice mindfulness, which we know has been scientifically proven to help with anxiety. And just slowing down and taking time to smell and to look and to really see.
At the Happiness Lab at Carleton University in Ottawa, psychology professor John Zielinski looks at the connection between people's mood and the natural world. He says the research tells us that we feel better when we spend time in nature.
The people who have this sense of nature-relatedness, this nature connection, report a lot of positive features of mental health. So emotional well-being, a sense of satisfaction with life, more a sense of meaning and purpose in life.
Studies out of Japan, which have honed in on forest bathing specifically, have produced some impressive results. Studies also point to mental health benefits. Hostility and depression scores go down, while liveliness scores go up. Kathy Sager, a recreation therapist at Ottawa's Royal Mental Health Centre, works with patients who she describes as clients suffering from schizophrenia and depression.
Psychosis affects perceptions of reality, and we perceive reality through our five senses.
She already leads her patients through indoor mindfulness sessions as they sit in chairs. But she wondered, how might her patients respond in forest bathing in an outdoor setting? She did her research first.
21 of the 28 studies determined that it was a very effective means of treating the symptoms of depression.
She asked Andrea to lead 8 of her patients in a session here at the Fletcher Wildlife Garden, full of trees, birds, groundhogs, rabbits, and ducks. The results were better than she expected.
And at least 2 of the clients distinctly noted feeling calmer after. Those were their own words. I felt calmer after. And one noted he felt anxious in advance of the forest therapy session. Because it was new, because often getting out comes with all this realm of unknowns. So just the experience of getting out, let alone doing something that you're not familiar with. And one of them also noted they were more aware of their surroundings after.
Would you do it again?
Definitely. Definitely I would do it again. And I think it would be the sort of thing that anytime you're doing a new experience, there's that distraction of, what am I doing? I mean, sure, there's part of you that's mindful, but at times your mind wanders. So having the familiarity of, oh, I've done this exercise, and honing into it that much more. And also over time, looking at the benefits that accumulate over time rather than a one-time session.
Shan Griffiths for DW in Ottawa.
Okay, so some forest therapy to reduce your stress. Now, one more health and safety tip before you go. According to the Red Cross organization, December, remember this is the December special of the show, December and January are the most dangerous months of the year for house fires. And that is because, as you might expect, people tend to light candles this time of the year and they use their fireplaces or wood stoves. And there are even some crazy old German Christmas traditionalists, I will call them, who light real candles on their Christmas trees. It sounds nuts. It's true. And to be fair, the trees are usually very freshly cut and very green. But still, good Lord, what a perfect opportunity for a fire. And for years, this was the noise that was meant to save us all if a fire occurred. So many of you will be familiar with that sound there, hopefully just from cooking something and burning it and hearing that loud noise in the background. Well, a report published in the Journal of Pediatrics suggests that that sound is not the best way to save sleeping children from a fire. So what the researchers did is they swapped that noise out, that beeping noise, and they replaced it with three different maternal voices. So a motherly sounding female voice. They had three of them. And then they took nearly 200 children between the ages of 5 and 12, and they let the kids fall asleep, deeply asleep, called stage 4 slow wave sleep. And then bam, they woke them up either with the beeping alarm or the maternal motherly voice. So what happened? That maternal voice alarm woke up roughly 86% all the way up to 91% of the children, and nearly as many were able to escape. Those beeping detectors, meanwhile, only woke up about half of the children, so 53% with 51% escaping. Here's the part of the study that really jumped out at me. It was that the median time to wake up for that beeping detector was 2.5 minutes. So it started going off, beep, beep, beep. It took the kids 2.5 minutes to wake up. But with the maternal voice alarm, it took 2 seconds. So why mention this? Well, there are a lot of people lighting fires right now in their fireplaces, and this finding feels like it could save a lot of lives, and it's my hope, anyway, this Christmas season, my gift from Santa Claus, if I could have one, would be that these devices, these smoke alarms, would start putting maternal voices in there telling people, you know, to please get out now in that very calm, motherly tone. Hey, well, that is it from me this week. A special thanks to my sound engineer, Lena Hilla, and to all of you out there for tuning in this week to this December special. And again, just a reminder, if you do have old-fashioned smoke detectors in your home right now, do replace those batteries regularly. This is the best time of the year to do it. If you have any questions or comments or random scientific insights, or hey, even if you're bored, send us an email. We're at spectrum@dw.com. If you want more of our stuff, more DW SciTech goodness, and seriously, why would you not? Come find us at dw.com/science. We're also on Facebook at DW Science, and we're on Twitter at DW_SciTech. Lots of fun stuff on those platforms. On behalf of all my colleagues here at Deutsche Welle, I would like to wish you a wonderful week ahead and a safe and happy and stress-free holiday season.